Well, this is Arthur Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views, the views of our guests. And, well, this afternoon our guest is our good friend, Dr. Dennis Cuddy, who is, of course, taught at the university level, who was in the Department of Education during the Reagan years, has testified before Congress, has written a number of books, and unfortunately, most of them are not in print today, and we are hoping against hope we're going to be able to republish his book, The Secret Records Revealed, and we'll be talking about that perhaps either on this program or another program. But right now, of course, we are looking forward to having Dr. Cuddy with us as we begin to analyze what's really going on behind the scenes. I consider Dr. Cuddy the finest researcher we have. His material is impeccable. I've never found Dennis in putting forward anything that could not be verified from several reliable sources, and a wonderful source of information for me, and I'm sure for many, many of our listening audience. Well, certainly there's so many uncertain things going on today. Certainly, Dr. Joel Skousen was mentioning the disappearance of the honeybees. Think of the implications. I mean, certainly at least a third of our crops require honeybees. What's going to happen to them? And if, of course, we've contaminated the corn crop, not only that that's grown directly from Monsanto, but all the other corn crops are actually destroyed through the spread of pollen from biogenetically altered fields to non-genetically altered fields. What's it going to do to our food crop? Could there really be great famine on the earth and millions of people die throughout the world? Millions of people die here in the United States? I believe so. In fact, if you read the writings of Barbara Mock Silver, who's one of the richest women in America, whose book, going into the background of the book of Revelation, it's titled Revelation, the book of co-creation, which was channeled to her by a demonic spirit called the Christ. She talks about the necessity of killing a quarter of the world's population. And as she said, that's not your job, my dear, that is ours, because we are the riders of the pale horse, death. So there really are people out there who would love to kill off at least a quarter of the world's population. Some would like to kill off 90% of the world population. Some would love to kill off 95% of the world's population. But let's get to our subject for the day. Dr. Dennis Cuddy, what are we going to be talking about today?
Well, the latest news with views column I have, the Iraq War, oil and world government, would be the subject, but chiming in and what you were saying, prior to bringing me on, one of those individuals in 1995 that was proposing 90% to 95% reduction in the Earth's population, and remember, that's not a, you know, let's keep the growth down, it's just a reduction, was a Sam Keen, and he made that statement at the first State of the World Forum that Gorbachev held there at the Presidio in San Francisco, and the people who were attending it were the sort of creme de la creme, the elite, and they wildly clapped when he said that. So this is not something that some isolated individuals have in mind, but here was the applause from the elite in the U.S. attending this first State of the World Forum, and they thought that was just a great idea to wipe out about 90% to 95% of the population.
And as incredible as it seems to be, there really are people who have a different worldview, who march to the sound of a different drumbeat, who dream a different dream because they worship a different God. We'll be back here in just a moment with Dr. Dennis Cuddy. Well, Dennis, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest this afternoon is Dr. Dennis Cuddy. And Dr. Cuddy is going to be discussing his latest article at newsreviews.com. Now, if you have access to the Internet and you don't read newsreviews.com, you should read it every day, you'll find dozens of Dr. Cuddy's articles there at newsreviews.com. You go to the page, you look on the left side, scroll down, and you'll see his name. And I suggest that you pull down those articles and you copy them and you put them in a loose leaf folder and you refer to them. And you refer to them frequently on many subjects. You'll find they are a wealth of information. And we're going to be talking about the latest article that's posted there on the Iraq War. So pick the story up, Dennis, please.
Sure. The reason I am picking up at this point on this subject about the Iraq War, oil, and world government is originally there were various theories about why we would want to be involved in Iraq, and among them was the issue of the availability of oil, the Iraqi oil, since they have a fairly significant share of OPEC's supply, a percentage that's, it's not the greatest supply, but it's a fairly large supply percentage out of OPEC, and there were various theories of why we really went to war, and that one popped up because in the previous Gulf War back in 91, James Baker, when they asked him, he said, well, jobs, 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 that's why we're there, and what he meant was oil, among a couple of other things, you know, trade and so on. But oil was a prominent part, and you heard about it then, but for the past, say, 3.5 years, you really haven't heard much about that. And so I wanted to revisit the subject because there's more to that than meets the eye, and it plays out in how this war has been mishandled. I'll put it mildly that way. One of the first things I noticed that was apparent was when President Bush announced the U.S. invasion, they usually give it a name. And so he called this originally Operation Iraqi Liberation. And surely, in my opinion, somebody there at the White House had to know that those first letters of those three words spell out OIL. And so I don't really think that was coincidental. Plus, one of the first messages he said to the Iraqi people at the time of the invasion was, quote, do not destroy oil wells, end quote. Now, some skeptic may say, well, sure, oil is a great part of the Iraqi population's income, comes from that, and you wouldn't destroy your own source of wealth. But
Hold that thought for just a moment here. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Dr. Cuddy is talking about the idea that we are in Iraq today, primarily for oil, and he was pointing out that George Bush named the initial operation in Iraq Operation Iraqi Liberation, O-I-L, Operation Iraqi Liberation, and told the Iraqi people, do not destroy the oil wells. Do not destroy the oil wells. Wasn't saying, you know, don't destroy the museums. Don't destroy all this this ancient art that's in the museums. No. Don't destroy the oil wells. So there seemed to have been a great emphasis on oil from the very beginning. But the problem is that instead of course, having all this oil available, we're told, and lowering the price of oil, why, the price of gasoline has gone up. When George Bush got to the White House, the price of oil was $18 a barrel, and now it was up $60, $65 in there. And of course, I fear before long, if we go into Iran to liberate their oil, we may be able to get the price of oil down to about $80 a barrel. But you pick the story up there, Dr. Cuddy.
Yeah, I think that's very apropos. You said we're going to liberate their oil. Originally, oil was presented rather prominently, but the way it was presented as a reason for this invasion being okay back in about 4 years ago was that, well, don't worry, Congress, because very soon, with our control over this country, the oil will start flowing, and the Iraqis themselves will be paying for it. And so members of Congress will say, oh, well, so it's not going to be a big budget buster, so okay. So oil was a fact. I mean, it was presented. But the point is, it wasn't the real reason that we were going, at least not oil in that sense. And so the American media for the past 3.5 years have done the usual, you know, where's the weapons of mass destruction, and, you know, isn't it great? On the other side, the neocons are saying, well, isn't it great that the Iraqi people have been liberated from this evil dictator and so on. But if the listeners to Radio Liberty will recall, over the past several years, when Dr. Stan has been looking at this issue, both Dr. Stan and myself have pointed out that you can't be this stupid the way the administration has conducted this war, first of all, not seeing that it was going to be an urban guerrilla warfare with RPGs, and while President Bush was saying mission accomplished, or at least that was on the battleship that he came on to, or the aircraft carrier, that you can't say that they did not see this coming, what's happened. And so the problem was, it was presented to the public as a great success. Look how fast we went from Kuwait to Baghdad. And what I had pointed out many times was, that's what Saddam's strategy wanted us to do. He actually wanted us to move quickly from Kuwait to Baghdad, because only then would we get out of battle formation and into these smaller patrols that could be more easily hit with RPGs and roadside bombs and so on. And so the media have downplayed other issues other than these sort of obvious ones, and almost sort of neglected what was going on with such factors as oil. And so what I want to do is point out that not only in my book, Cover Up, which is offered by Radio Liberty, did I include the statement of what Saddam's secret strategy would be, and that book was written before the war began, but I also included in the addendum to it, which is posted on newswithviews.com, additional information. Many people have talked about the Project for the New American Century, and that is an important group. In fact, Ian Lustig, professor at Pennsylvania University, said that group, the PNAC, Project for the New American Century, literally runs the White House. But something else that I included in the addendum was another group which has gotten practically no attention at all. And since I mentioned James Baker before, he was prominent in this. This was an independent task force that was set up, sponsored by the James A. Baker III Institute for Public Policy at Rice University, that's in Texas, and the CFR, Council on Foreign Relations. And what struck me about this particular group was it included, among others, high-level people like Enron Chairman Kenneth Lay, as well as a lot of oil executives from British Petroleum, Shell Oil, Chevron, Texaco, and so on. Plus, you always have the ever-present Kissinger Associates person. So in this case, it was Thomas McClarty of what's now called Kissinger McClarty Associates. He was a member. Plus, you always have in these important meetings some sort of a Rhodes Scholar of some type. And so this one was Stephen Oxman, who had been Assistant Secretary of State in the Clinton administration. He was an observer. And so they go through these meetings, and this is before 9/11 and so on. And CFR President at the time, Leslie Gelb, comes out afterwards, and they present the task force findings, and he congratulated them, thanked them, or three what he called complicated video conferences and teleconferences. Now, remember, this is a year before 9/11. And what happened was they issued a report, and it was called Strategic Energy Policy Challenges for the 21st Century. Now, even though it came out a year before 9/11, there were two important points in this thing. One addressed the Taliban in Afghanistan, and another part of it addressed Iraq. This is before even 9/11. All right, relevant to the war in against the Taliban in Afghanistan, this is a year before 9/11, it indicated that, the report did, quote, the export from oil discoveries in the Caspian Basin could be hastened if a secure economical export route could be identified swiftly. The option exists to downplay diplomatic activities that dictate certain geopolitical goals or specific transportation routes for Caspian oil in favor of immediate commercial solutions that may be sought by individual oil companies for short-term exports of early oil, including exports through Iran, end quote. Now, that sounds like most of these documents, sort of, you know, high-level language and very general and so on. But if you look at the key elements of it, what it's doing is saying, okay, there's going to be oil. We'll portray this as we can get this this oil export to the major companies. They'll love that. And we can get it rather swiftly. You know, we'll move swiftly, get everything in the works. But then it said what you should do is downplay the diplomatic activities that dictate certain geopolitical goals or specific transportation routes for the Caspian oil. In other words, I'm going to translate that. Look, this isn't just a general issue about oil. What's going on here is we have larger geopolitical goals, and those goals that we have, and we want to downplay them, we don't want the people to know about it, are actually dictating certain transportation routes. In other words, we want to cut that thing down through Afghanistan, which means that if the Taliban isn't cooperative, we got to get rid of the Taliban. And the same thing with Iraq, and I'll get that in a minute. So what you have to understand is, while on the surface, you know, early oil, you know, they can pay for their own, we'll get this thing cranked up, don't worry about the budget and so forth, what's really going on and what they're downplaying are other goals, geopolitical goals or certain transportation routes. So it's not just a transportation route, like, isn't this convenient to go through Afghanistan? There are geopolitical goals involved in dictating these specific transportation routes.
And what you're really talking about is oil pipelines, because you can have all the oil you want in the Caspian Basin. If you didn't have oil pipelines, you couldn't get it out to world markets. So they've got to be able to either take it through Afghanistan or through Iran or certainly through Iraq.
Right.
Go ahead.
No, that's exactly it. And they wanted to downplay that because that's what was really going on. Now, relevant to the war with Iraq, and remember these reports come out before 9/11, this task force report stated, quote, "Iraq remains a destabilizing influence to U.S. allies in the Middle East, Israel, Jordan, so on, as well as to regional and global order, as your global order, and to the flow of oil to international markets from the Middle East." Okay, markets from the Middle East. Saddam Hussein has also demonstrated a willingness to threaten to use the oil weapon and to use his own export program to manipulate oil markets. This would display his personal power, enhance his image as a pan-Arab leader supporting the Palestinians against Israel, and pressure others for a lifting of economic sanctions against his regime. The United States should conduct an immediate, remember this, a year before 9/11, should conduct an immediate policy review towards Iraq, including military, I'll emphasize that, military, energy, economic, and political diplomatic assessments. The United States should then develop an integrated strategy with key allies in Europe and Asia and with key countries in the Middle East to restate the goals with respect to Iraqi policy and to restore a cohesive coalition of key allies. And here's the final statement. Now, pay attention to this. Like it or not, Iraqi reserves represent a major asset that can quickly add capacity to world oil markets and inject a more competitive tenor to oil trade, end quote. Now, there's two things in there you need to pay attention to. Remember, this is before 9/11, and I keep saying that, and you're probably saying, why does he keep saying that? Well, the point is, the justification for going after Saddam was presented as, well, Saddam has a connection with al-Qaeda and so forth as a result of 9/11. Well, they're planning this even before there is a 9/11. And so what you have here is military strategy that's going to affect him, and like it or not, that can affect the world oil supply, and we'll pick up on why that's important after the break.
And I think it's so important for people to understand that we had to have an excuse to go to war. After all, we couldn't use that oil, we couldn't get the pipelines in, unless we had a war there. And so, wasn't it convenient that 9/11 came out when it did? But then we were able to rally the American people behind the government, first go to war with Afghanistan, and then go to war with Iraq, and very soon to be at war with Iran. And, of course, we know that this wasn't planned ahead of time, it just all happened that way. It just all happened that way by accident. We'll be back in just a moment here with Dr. Dennis Kenny. Well, Dr. Cuddy, you go ahead and pick up that story.
Okay. Just focusing then on the last sentence, the like it or not. Now, what that is sort of a code like, watch out for this, and maybe we ought to do something if we don't like it. I'm translating there. Iraqi reserves represent a major asset that can quickly add capacity to world oil markets and inject a more competitive tenor to oil trade, end quote. And so what I've added here right after that in my article on News with Views is, what if you don't want to add capacity, quote, and have, quote, a more competitive, quote, market? What if you don't want that? And what if you want to limit the availability of oil in order to drive up prices? What you do in that case is two things happen. You sort of kill two birds with one stone. On the one hand, if you limit the oil supply, you drive up the price, but then the existing supply lasts longer, and you can charge this higher price for something that lasts longer. So you get like a double benefit. And the reason I raise those questions is there was a column by a BBC, British Broadcasting Corporation person named Greg Palast, and it was less than a month ago, March 18th, and it was titled, "It's Still the Oil Secret Condoleezza Rice Meeting on Oil Before Invasion." And in the article, Palast writes that, quote, "In 2005, after a two-year battle with the State and Defense Departments, they released to my team at the BBC Newsnight the," what was called, the title of it was, quote, "Options for a Sustainable Iraqi Oil Industry," end quote. And then Palast goes on. He says, "Now you might think that our government should not be writing a plan for another nation's oil. Well," he says, "our government did not write it, despite the State Department seal on the cover. In fact, we," that's the BBC team, "discovered that the 323-page plan was drafted in Houston by oil industry executives and consultants. The suspicion is that Bush went to war to get Iraq's oil." Palast says, "That's not true. The document and secret recordings of those in on the scheme made it clear that the administration wanted to make certain America did not get the oil. In other words, keep the lid on Iraq's oil production and thereby keep the price of oil high," end quote. Now, if you look at it in that context, it sort of makes sense as to why we've had this sort of continuing instability there. You know, golly shucks, we just haven't been able to manage this thing right. And, the oil just doesn't seem to flow. I know originally we told you it would, they pay for them, but, you know, all this chaos and, you know, the reserves, they're in there, but we just can't protect them and get them out. So, you know, we're going to have to charge $80 a barrel or whatever eventually. So that could be one reason why this sort of continued chaos has continued. All right, Palast goes on then in his article to explain that the report said Iraq should be required to remain an obedient member of the OPEC cartel and stick to the oil production limits, which are quotas, which keep up oil prices. He continued to say, quote, "And that's undoubtedly why Condoleezza Rice asked Fadil Chalabi to take charge of Iraq's oil ministry. As a former chief operating officer of OPEC, the oil cartel, Fadil was a big oil favorite. Now, eventually, Fadil turned down the job, but it was given to his fellow tribesman, Ahmad Chalabi, who your listeners may have remembered. He's that convicted bank swindler.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, Dr. Cuddy is simply talking about Iraq's oil. And comments that Greg Palast, who actually is an American, but he works for BBC, because, of course, over here in America, they will not allow his accurate reporting. After all, anybody here on a major network who really told you the truth about everything would lose his job very soon. Lou Dobbs tells you what he's allowed to, but, you know, most of the people simply go along. Well, Dr. Cuddy is simply pointing out, isn't it strange that we went in there, and of course there was supposedly for the oil, but what Greg Palast has done under the Freedom of Information Act is getting the master plan. It wasn't drawn up by our government for Iraq's oil. It was drawn up in Houston, Texas, by the oil companies, and their theme was, we don't want Iraq's oil coming on the market. We want to keep the price of oil up. We want to create artificial shortages. And, of course, I would simply add to that, when gasoline gets to $6 or $8 a gallon, you are going to have to conserve. And this is really what it's all about. You see, that's going to get you out of your car. It's going to force you to ration your use of gasoline. It's going to force you to lower your living standards. But that isn't the government's fault. I mean, they're doing everything they can to get that oil there and keep the price down. And, oh, shucks, we're just so incompetent, as Dr. Cuddy has said. Why, look at that chaos we have over in Iraq. If it hadn't been for that chaos, why, we would have been able to do the right thing. But we couldn't stop that chaos. No, sirree, there was just nothing we could do about it. We're just terribly sorry that the price of gasoline has gone up so high, but that isn't our fault. But that's exactly what the report that came out from the oil companies long before the Iraq invasion actually said. So pick up the story there, Dr. Cuddy.
Sure. And if you, as I told you listeners many times, look at things on the surface level, you know, see if they make sense. But then also ask yourself, you know, what is the real goal of this thing? And how would this fit into the power elite's plan to move towards a world government control us? And so if you look at it that way, you can see why this sort of simmering chaos and violence has continued. If you went in and you had complete success, you know, we really managed the country, they loved us, hooray, liberation, the Sunnis and Shiites get along, everybody's happy, well, then, you know, the oil would flow and our buddies there who we put in power would see to it that we, you know, had lots of oil and maintained the cheap price and everything would be hunky-dory. On the other hand, if you had, let's say, total defeat, you know, oh, my goodness, we're beaten. You know, we're immediately withdrawing, and after a year, this is a total lost cause. We blew it. Well, the same thing would happen. You'd have probably some civil war, but then somebody would win, and you have sort of a Saddam Hussein-type government again who would fit with that scenario that this report by the Baker Institute and CFR was warning about, that sort of like it or not. So given that we didn't want either one, I mean, I'm not going to say we didn't want. That would be accusatory. But given that neither total success has happened, nor total failure, but as I pointed out many times and predicted many times, that this sort of, you know, level of violence would just continue in the first year, second year, third year, fourth year, despite all the claims, well, you know, now they've got a constitution, this thing's going to turn around. This sort of explanation would fit for that, because only by this current situation, rather than total defeat or total success, would fit with what this document was explaining and what Greg Palast, what he found out from the document secret recordings, plus what I had put in my addendum from this James Baker Institute CFR report would sort of suggest. Okay, so what he says, Palast goes on about Ahmad Chalabi. Just like Fadhil Chalabi, he's, you know, a bank swindler, but he's the darling of certain people in our government. And so he was made head of Iraq's oil industry in Baghdad. But even so, even though that's the case, what Palast is saying, the orders still really come from Houston. Palast goes on, quote, indeed, the oil law adopted by Iraq's shaky government this month, that's last month, March, this past March, he says, Palast says, quote, is virtually a photocopy of the options, that's the title, plan first conceived in Texas long before Iraq was, quote, liberated. Alaska concludes, in other words, the war has gone exactly to plan, the Houston plan, end quote. And so if you look at the figures, we can pick up after the break.
You go right ahead. I'll tell you when we have to stop.
Okay. Well, the facts are that before the war, Iraq's oil production was 4 million barrels a day. Now it's about half, 2.1 million barrels. Today, oil is about roughly $57 a barrel, compared to just $18 a barrel before the Bush presidency. So what we need to do next is see who specifically has benefited from the war. And in my expanded addendum book, book cover-up, I wrote that, quote, after the war with Iraq commenced, ABC News on March 22, 2003, right after it began, related that, quote, weeks before the first bombs dropped in Iraq, the Bush administration began rebuilding plans, end quote.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty. Dr. Cuddy, you can go on with the story there.
Okay, so ABC News, right after the war began with Iraq, ABC News, March 22, 2003, was talking about before the first bombs dropped, the Bush administration also already had rebuilding plans. And it continues, this ABC item, says, referring to, quote, secret bids, ABC News indicated that it had obtained a copy of a 99-page contract worth $600 million. Among the companies believed to be bidding are Bechtel and Halliburton, Vice President Cheney's old firm, end quote. So what you see is the two major international corporations, Bechtel and Halliburton and others, are going to benefit from this, and the rebuilding plans are way, before the bombs even start dropping. And what you need to understand is Halliburton, their primary business isn't oil, you know, as such, like Exxon. Their primary business is oil services like drilling and piping equipment. And since the war began, Halliburton stock has tripled in value to $64 a share. So you can see this not only the, you know, the oil companies, but what you have are these other corporations like Vice President Cheney's old firm, Halliburton, going up to three times what it was before the war. Now, remember that at the beginning of the war, one among the messages President Bush gave the Iraqis was don't destroy oil wealth. Well, another coincidence. Guess who got the contract to extinguish oil well fires? Remember this chaos, the continuing chaos? Golly, we can't protect everything. There are these fires all the time, and that's why the oil can't flow and so on. Well, guess who? It was U.S. contractor Kellogg Brown & Root, which is a subsidiary of Halliburton. They got that contract. So you got the oil companies, great profits. You got Halliburton with their piping and drilling profits. And then you got another division of Halliburton, Kellogg Brown Root, putting out all these fires that just keep popping up. Now, in terms of the oil companies themselves, if you look at the five biggest oil companies, their reserves have more than doubled during the war in value to $2.36 trillion. The reserves, the value, more than double. Specifically regarding ExxonMobil, for example, its profit of $10 billion last quarter, that's not a year, $10 billion last quarter, which would be $40 billion a year, is the largest of any corporation in history. This thing's been a gold mine for these people. The big oil, places like Halliburton, Bechtel, Kellogg, Brown Root, these are the outfits that are greatly benefiting by this war as it has been mishandled. If it had been handled well, not so much, but mishandled, they get filthy rich.
Hold on, so we'll be back in just a moment here with Dr. Cuddy. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this afternoon is Dr. Cuddy. And as you know, we have Dr. Cuddy on a regular basis. If you listen to all 5 hours a day, we do hear why Dr. Cuddy is with us every single week, keeping us abreast of what's really going on in the world. But I want to mention that there's been a problem, Doctor. There's been some serious medical illnesses in Dr. Cuddy's family, and with tremendous expenses that Medicare, although it promises to pay everything, but it really doesn't. In fact, they're specifically cutting back because they don't have money. Medicare is on the fringe of bankruptcy. Anybody who knows what's really going on knows that they keep cutting back and back and back. So certainly I know I and my staff are going to be sending some money to help him. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you would like to help Dr. Cuddy meet these really overwhelming medical bills that he and his family have, why, if you'd like to send a donation, you can send it directly to Radio Liberty. But we want you to mark on the front that it's for Dr. Cuddy, that we don't want to get it into our coffers. But if you'd like to help out, why, give us you can actually send a check, or so you could even call our 800 number and put it on your Visa or MasterCard. Then you're going to send something, you can send it to Post Office Box 969 in Soquel, California. 969 Soquel, California, 95073. That's 969 Soquel, California, 95073. Or certainly you can call our 800 number, 1-800-544-8927. I know I'll appreciate it because I always look forward to having Dr. Cuddy. And in my estimation, he's the finest researcher we have, and he's dedicated totally the bringing of the information you're not going to get elsewhere, but right now some devastating things have happened. So if you can help out, you're in a position to, I know he will appreciate it deeply, and I will as well. So again, our telephone number, if you'd like to call and make a pledge, and we'll simply just relay this on to Dr. Cuddy, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927. Dr. Cuddy, would you like to pick the story up there?
Thank you, Dr. Stan, and I and my family really appreciate that greatly, and any of your listeners who care to help, we really appreciate it.
And that wasn't Dr. Cuddy's idea. That was my secretary's idea, who told me that we needed to do this to help Dennis and his family. So if you can help, certainly she's contributing, and as are the people who work here at Radio Liberty. Go ahead, Dennis.
Okay. Well, as I was indicating, only by mismanagement do you have these tremendous profits. If the war had been, a huge success and they loved us and everything went just fine, then you wouldn't have this limited availability of oil. The oil would flow, the price would stay down. So it's only by the mishandling of this war, which has continued year after year, that you have these tremendous profits for oil companies and others. Because they provide, the pipelines. Oh, my gosh, look, there's another destroyed pipeline. Well, we've got to order some more piping and drilling equipment. You get the idea. So anyway, this is how one would look at it if you're looking at it not in terms of its face value, but how does this fit with some larger plan that the power elite has? And so the power elite running the world, I've mentioned many times before, know exactly what they're doing. They're not just a bunch of bumbling idiots out there, mismanaging things because they're stupid. This is part of a long-range plan, and the war in Iraq is part of that plan leading towards a world socialist government. Now, throughout history, Dr. Stan has mentioned many times some of the key players and the agents, sort of the front men of these power elites. You have Colonel House back under Woodrow Wilson. You have a person like John J. McCloy who succeeded him. McCloy became a chairman of the Council on Foreign Relations from 1953 to 1970. Then you have the Kissingers and Zbigniew Brzezinski and others like that, and we've discussed them and put their quotes. But someone who has not had much attention to him paid except by Constance Cumby, who is almost seems like she's dedicated her research efforts to following Javier Solana. It's well worth it that she has. She's very expertise in this. He's become one of the most powerful men on Earth. The thing is, if you look at him, once again, don't just look at him in terms of face values, but look at him as how does a physics teacher get to be one of the most, if not the most powerful man on Earth? How does that happen?
Now, this is Javier Solana, who, of course, was a Spanish socialist who hated NATO and opposed NATO, and suddenly he's the head of NATO. How does that happen? And, of course, Javier Solana, if you go up on the Internet and you track him, you'll find out he's probably one of the most quoted men in the world today, and yet most people have never heard of him. But he is the man, of course, that Bill Clinton and other world leaders look to for their direction. He is very, very close to the power elite, the head of the power elite that's ruling the world. So pick the story up.
Right, and since you mentioned Clinton, I'll sort of weave this all together. You're not just a simple lowly physics teacher in Spain and all of a sudden get vaulted into position. What you usually have is somebody who's been groomed, and they've been set up, and they're from the establishment, and they move up through the ranks. But this guy's a physics teacher back in the 60s, and now he's one of the most powerful people. So how does it happen? Well, as I indicated, and I don't have this in my News with Views column, but I'll spend about 15, 20 seconds on this. You have Cecil Rhodes' plan to take the government of the whole world. He used Rhodes Scholars. Among the Rhodes Scholars are Bill Clinton, Strobe Talbott, his Oxford Rhodes Scholar roommate, and others like Richard Gardner. All right, what they do is they're looking for somebody to be the political head of NATO. They stick in Wesley Clark, General Clark, to be the military head, but they got to have their guy as the political head of NATO. So what Clinton does is he goes and picks Richard Gardner, another Rhodes Scholar who had written back in 1974 in the CFR's Journal of Foreign Affairs, April 74, that they would erode national sovereignty piece by piece, and that would get them more success than the old-fashioned frontal attack. And they used GATT to do it and so forth. You spell all that out. So what you do is you get Gardner to be ambassador to Spain. you know, not the most prominent position, England, Moscow, no, Spain. And so you reach down and you get this socialist, as Dr. Stan said, who would oppose Spain's entry into NATO anyway, and you say, you know, behind the scenes, have we got a deal for you? And so you make him the political head of NATO. And so now you're all big, one happy cooperative effort here of the Parallel. And so if you look at this guy, Solana, recently, just a couple of months ago, February 14th, he's visiting. He's always traveling with Condi Rice or somebody. And so in New York, he's delivering the speech at the Arthur Burns dinner. That's the old, you know, Fed chairman years ago, in which he stated that, quote, "It is true to say that the future global system will be a system of continents and continent-wide regimes such as the European Union, African Union, and ASEAN Plus." And he also stressed, quote, "strengthening regional cooperation," and said that, quote, "in today's world, we must be ready to transcend the interstate paradigm," end quote. Once again, you know, a lot of diplomatic jargon and so on. But if you cut through it, the key words are a global system, not going to be individual nations, but continents or continent-wide regimes, you know, like a North American Union, for example. And he stressed regional cooperation. Remember what Cecil Rhodes' plan was, as spelled out by P.E. Corbett in his book Post-War Worlds in 1942. It would link up regional arrangements. And finally, in today's world, we must be ready to transcend the interstate paradigm, you know, bilateral, just two nations together making an agreement. So this is basically Cecil Rhodes' plan for regional associations involving trade and security and so on. And it also fits with this plan coming forward today, the Security and Prosperity Partnership of North America, the SPP, which would link the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, see, continent-wide, North America. And in SPP's report to its leaders, June 2005, in the SPP report, one finds language such as, quote, "we need integrated, coordinated, seamless measures," and, quote, "increased economic integration," and, quote, "this partnership is designed to be a dynamic, permanent process."
I think that what you're really saying is we're going to do away with national sovereignty, we're going to do away with the Constitution, we're going to do away with the freedom of the American people, and we're going to merge Canada and Mexico with the United States, and we're going to raise the living standards of that American to that of the Mexican peasants. Go right ahead.
That's right. And if you have economic integration, the obvious question is, and why you should ask your congressman why they would buy this stuff, is, well, what happens if Mexico's economy goes in the tank? If we are integrated with them, if our economic system is linked with them, then their failure becomes at least partially our failure because we're integrated. And secondly, it says this process is a dynamic, permanent process. In other words, we're not getting out of this thing. Once you get into this, that's it. We're permanently connected economically with Mexico. They dive, we dive. Maybe not totally, but, you know, we take a big hit. And so it's inconceivable that any American leader would buy this type of arrangement, but that's what we're going towards. Okay. Now, the most recent example of linking the arrangements, I've just described the arrangement like a North American Union. So the most recent example of actually linking regional arrangements can be found in the first sentence of the March 20th, just a few days ago, 2007 article called "The EU and U.S. Begin Single Market Push." That's in the Financial Times, a respected newspaper. And it states, the first sentence, quote, "The European Union and the U.S. will next month start an ambitious initiative to harmonize regulations, norms, and technical standards in up to 40, that's 40, 40 economic and industrial sectors, laying the cornerstone for a single market between the two regions." Now, remember, this isn't just, you know, one little bilateral, you know, let's have asparagus or something. This is 40 economic and industrial sectors are going to have harmonized regulations, norms, and standards. Okay, now, the article even used the word region. Remember, that's a key word because that's part of Rhodes' plan. And when it said region, it didn't just say the EU is a region. It said the U.S. as a region. In other words, they're anticipating that this will be a region, not just the U.S., not just a sovereign nation, but part of a region. That's where it will be considered. Okay, the Parallel technique of accomplishing their ultimate goal is to use a gradual approach, sort of like the Fabian socialist approach, And this was already demonstrated in the European Union, and it was called the Monnet method, Jean Monnet, M-O-N-N-E-T, which was used to condition the people of Europe over a time to accept this. You know, they first start with the European Economic Community, then they have eventually a union late in the 1990s. This approach actually began about 100 years ago. Monnet concocted it in, say, the 20s, roughly. And that was the same time that I've said to your listeners before that Edward Bernays, who was Sigmund Freud's nephew, authored his book Propaganda, in which he boasted that they could, quote, manipulate the organized habits and opinions of the masses, end quote. So this is a strategy, long-term, whereby they will manipulate your opinions of the masses, not just individuals, the masses, to accept this sort of thing on a gradual basis. Now, one of the most effective methods for manipulating or conditioning the masses is to use the public school. Why? Well, youngsters at an early age, impressionable, their values being formed, sure, they're influenced by music and so on, but in the schools, they're a captive audience. They're required to go to school. So by the 1960s, the progressive education followers of John Dewey had gained control of the schools at the classroom level. They'd been working, you know, colleges of education, but now they've got control down the classroom. And they changed the emphasis from the cognitive domain, late 50s, early 60s, you know, reading, writing, math, basics, to the affective domain. They started emphasizing social relationships and feelings. Why? Because feelings are more manipulable, more controllable, subject to conditioning, and that's what they wanted. And what I would say to your listeners, if you think about it, over the last 20 years, they used to say, well, what do you think about such and such, John or Jane? Now, they more often than not will say, well, how do you feel about something, rather than what do you think about it? They don't want you to think. They really don't, because they want you to have feelings. You will respond to some emotive situation that they develop and send to you, you know, some sort of psychological shock or whatever. So the public schools, I want to emphasize, is not the only place where this conditioning has occurred. It's also occurred in the entertainment industry. It's sort of more widespread. For example, music. I mentioned rock music. If you notice that, you can't understand the lyrics anymore. It used to be 30, 40, 50 years ago, the song, you listen to the music, isn't that a lovely ballad or something? Now the emphasis is on the feeling, the beat. You know, listen to the beat. Well, Dr. Jack Wheaton, who's written many books, or a number of books on this, said what that does is it, quote, triggers major subconscious emotional responses in the body that can easily overpower the higher reasoning portions of the brain and bring about uncontrollable physiological, psychological, and spiritual changes that are often in direct conflict with biblical teachings, end quote. That's what I meant about reshaping the values. This isn't just an economic thing, a political thing. They have to get at the values. They have to undermine the biblical, traditional, moral values as well. And so, you know, rock music just didn't come out of nowhere. And in addition, in the entertainment industry, of course, you have movies, popular movies. Why are they popular? Why is the Da Vinci Code popular? It really makes no sense. Sure, you know, it's a fascinating, fast-moving, so forth. But what it does is a psychological ploy. The basis of the Da Vinci Code is they said, well, way back, you know, Jesus is supposed to have had sex with Mary Magdalene. Well, they don't want you to think about that. They want, you know, this sort of emotive sexual feeling response, right? Why did they do that? Well, that's a way of controlling, conditioning the masses. They bring Jesus down to sort of just a human being level, when if you think about it, you would immediately say, well, you know, why would he have sex with Mary Magdalene? He's God. He can do anything just by, you know, thinking. He can have a state of ecstasy far greater than sex with any woman. But they don't want you to think. They want you to react in terms of emotions and feelings because those are more easily manipulable. And that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to shift this emphasis through entertainment, education, music, movies, whatever, and change the process. Not just, they don't just have economic goals. It's sort of like Barry Goldwater said in his book With No Apologies, was the title, 1979, about the Trilateral Commission. He says not only political, economic, and social control, they want ecclesiastical control as well. And back in the 50s, Kissinger was with the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, and they put out a report about the title, The Mid-Century Challenges, in I think it was 58. And in there, they started out with saying there's going to be this, quote, new world order. We're going to shape it. You know, we have the obligation to do this. And it said the first one was spiritual, economic, social, political. Spiritual is key because if you try to change the economics and politics, but the people still have traditional biblical moral absolutes and values, the people aren't going to buy it. They're not going to accept this economic and political change that you've got in store for them. So they can't leave that element alone. They have to change and condition the public to accept these things, to accept the economic challenges, and to accept the political challenges to our constitutional system. So don't forget that aspect of it, and that's the power elite's plan, and Iraq and oil are a major part of that movement towards world government.
And so behind this whole movement towards the New World Order and the New World Leader is the spiritual aspect, which, of course, is to destroy the traditional spiritual beliefs of our people and replace the materialism and then atheism, and then, of course, as we see, increasingly pagan beliefs, a worship of a different type of God. They're working even with our churches to accomplish that. Our guest has been Dr. Dennis Kelly. Thank you so very much. Oh, we've got about 3 more minutes to wrap up the program right here at Radio Liberty. Well, Dennis, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Well, I would just emphasize again, it's okay to look at things on the surface value, and, you know, does this make sense or whatever. But always look at it in terms of the power elite's goal, because when you see it in that sense, you can see it's like a puzzle being fit together. And I'll just reemphasize that spiritual aspect, because people, what you would say is, well, what's a Rockefeller group talking about spiritual? You know, he's a banker. Why would he do that? You know, why would they be doing this back in the 50s? You know, politics, sure, he goes out and the various campaigns, and I support Ike or, you know, whoever. So what's he, you know, why is he interested in spirituality? Well, these people, part of the power elite, know that they have to have that element involved in it, because you're not going to be able to accomplish these other things if the public is a traditional, moral-minded, biblical-oriented. And you have to start in the schools, because that's your captive audience in the public schools. And so that's one place you reshape the values, in addition to the entertainment industry and so on. But if any of your listeners would remember that a lot of people will come on talk shows and they have this, that, and other opinion. What I try to do, and in the books that I have that Radio Liberty offers, is give the specifics, give the quotes, give who said it, give the documentation, because when somebody would say something like David Rockefeller is doing whatever, you need to actually have the quote that he has from his book, Memoirs, which I've included in my News with Views and other things, columns, where he says, some people have said that we, his family, are part of a secret cabal conspiring against the best interest of the United States in order to form a more integrated global political and economic structure, one world, if you will, like a one-world government. And then he says, the very next sentence is, if that's the charge, I stand guilty and I am proud of it, end quote. Now, that's not only tremendously revealing, first. Secondly, ABC, NBC, CBS aren't telling you about that, and you would think they would. But thirdly, why would he do it? Why would he do it? Did he mess up? Did he reveal something he shouldn't have? No, I think it was deliberate. They have this plan of sort of in your face. At a certain stage, they feel that you are prepared. You have been conditioned spiritually in terms of values to accept what they're doing. And so they do a probe, a psychological probe. They blurt out a sentence, 2 sentences like Rockefeller did, to see what the reaction is. If there's no tremendously negative outcry by the public, they've succeeded. There's their proof. They've succeeded. You have generally accepted it. You're not ranting and raving about, you know, what they're trying to do. You're simply saying, oh, let's go have a pizza or whatever.
Yeah, well, we're out of time, Dennis, but I think the idea that David Rockefeller has admitted that he is part of a cabal that is conspiring to bring about this global government, you know, should be concerning to everybody. God bless. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we do hope that you enjoyed our interview with Dr. Dennis Kelly today, a good friend. And if any of you are in a position to help out, whatever you can pledge, why, I know he'll appreciate it to get them through this very, very difficult time with a medical illness there. Then, of course, if you would like to know more about the things he's talking about, you can go to newswithviews.com and pull down Dr. Kelly's articles there. Of course, we do carry his book, Cover Up, the story of what really happened on 9/11. We carry his book, Timeline for the New World Order, for education, Road to Socialism, Mental Health Screening, a little short pamphlet called Conspiracy, Secret Records Revealed. Of course, they're all available by calling 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to read David Rockefeller's memoirs, where on page 405 he tells about, of course, that some people think he and his family are part of a cabal that's conspiring against the United States to bring about a new international, a global unit, a new world government. And then he goes on to say, if that's the charge, I plead guilty and I'm proud of it. He's part of a cabal that's conspiring against America. Some people would call that treason, but since he's one of the most powerful men, far richer than Bill Gates or the Warren Buffett, why very, very few people have the courage to speak out. After all, I mean, he is certainly the most powerful man in the United States today. If you'd like to get David Rockefeller's memoirs, they're available from Radio Liberty, as are Dr. Dennis Cuddy's writings. And then we hope many of you, if you want to understand the spiritual forces that have energized the Rockefeller family generation after generation and given the wealth that they have, you will certainly want to get my talk, Forbidden Secret. Forbidden Secret is available on DVD. You can also get it on video. It'll be available in a few days. Well, we recommend this to you. And then, of course, if you'd like to get Constance Cumby, she's been studying this. We have a 4-tape set with Constance, 4 interviews with her, where she goes into this world occult movement called, she calls it, the Hidden Dangers of the Rainbow, the occult movement which bridges to the other dimension. And, of course, the book is still available for Radio Liberty. And, of course, the 4-tape set is available for Radio Liberty. And a DVD with Constance. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. If you've not yet seen the DVDs put out by Joe Schimmel about what's going on in the music industry, and believe me, the same thing's going on, certainly in our political organizations, in the financial world, but this one deals with the music industry. It's titled, They Sold Their Souls for Rock and Roll. The 3-hour, the 4-hour, the 10-hour version, you will never look at the world through the same eyes again after you've seen that. They're available by calling 1-800-544-8927. Let me urge you, if you're out there in the listening audience, if you have not made preparations for the difficult times that lie ahead, when we do go to war with Iran, and I really believe it's only a matter of time, I don't know if it'll be a month, 3 months, 6 months, a year, but it could be just a matter of a month or two, or even less. Why, you really need to make your preparations to look after yourself. Why do you think that here in California, Maria Shriver, the governor's wife, has been on television night after night saying, make preparations for a disaster? Well, they know what's going to happen. They just don't want you to know that they know what's going to happen. They talk about floods or natural disasters, but they realize the implications of a war, a world war coming. So, you know, if you'd like, certainly an emergency food catalog, an emergency health catalog, or just one of our regular catalogs, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we go ask you to go to our website. You can listen to our programs directly or directly on the Internet 5 hours a day. And then we ask you to pray for America, to pray for revival, to pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. And again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.